And welcome, everybody. It's Off the Hook Overtime here on YouTube. Did everybody make it over? I think so. Scott Kyle, you there?
Yeah, I'm over here.
Okay, yeah, I see you. Rob, Gila, Alex, you all here?
We're here.
Yes, indeed. Welcome. And we're sounding good on YouTube.
All right. That's amazing. Our phone number, 802-321-4225. Did I get that right? 802-321-HACK is our phone number. You can join the conversation. You can be a part of Off the Hook, Off the Hook Overtime. Good conversation about all these different social issues going on that are very relevant to technology and just to society in general.
It occurred to me as we were talking, like, we, in the past, the tools of today applied to historic events are often, you know, spoken about in the most scary terms, like, what if, you know, X, you know, leaders or fascists here or there had the capabilities. Well,
I think we might be getting a call. Don't lose your train of thought, though. I'm not sure why Kyle's running to a different room. Something is up with the phone. You can come back, Kyle, and finish your thought, please. Let's not knock over the computers.
What was I saying? Oh yes, the specter of like tools of now being applied to these ideologies. Well, here are the ideologies, and here are the tools.
Mm-hmm.
So let's stop saying that that's a what if. It's here now. It's not as bad. I'm not comparing it to any historic atrocity. I am saying, though, people with this ideology are really trying to get good at tech, and they need to be turned away from this and guided towards what is, I think, not a much more healthy attitude towards what other people's ideas and their worth and contributions.
Yeah, but you're not
going to
stop people that you disagree with from getting good at tech. It's just they're not doing a very good job of it right now, but that could easily change.
I think that's foolish. It seems like they aren't, but this whole conversation around Telegram, mm-hmm. I mean, with the health issues alone, I was seeing influencers or people that were on certain networks moving that way as soon as health info started getting flagged and stuff. So these platforms where it's end-to-end, they're great. We're all for it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that we need backdoors and it should be broken. But I am saying that this feeling of safety they have should not be.
Okay. Safety through technology, I mean,
yes.
Safety through encryption. But, I mean, that same thing can be applied to anyone then, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough thing to say. I think you should always feel like, you know, you could possibly be vulnerable in your reliance on some platform or software.
I mean, our stand is that if you're vulnerable, it should be exposed.
Well,
you should prove it.
And, you know, my vulnerability, my sensitive conversations aren't necessarily going to be like plans I'm hatching about how marginalized people need to be further victimized
mm-hmm.
by me because I have a grievance. That's not what's going to be found. Yeah, my pants will be down, you know, and proverbially, so to speak. I will have revealed all of my most intimate parts by trusting technology, but it won't be full of the kind of vitriol and even hate speech. That's me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying that I think that we should not be smug about their hurdles with technology.
Well, yeah, we should not be smug. I definitely agree with that. You guys in Skype land, any comments before we go to this call?
You know, you keep hearing about new social media platforms that keep getting rolled out and how this is going to be the one that's not going to have censorship. This is going to be the one that's going to be the place you can come and be honest. But also, you know, where those things are being pitched and to whom. And, no, Kyle, I'm 100% with you. And the sense of who knows how they're using it, and, you know, when knowledge can be used for good or for less good, and who knows how to do what, can you follow?
Oh, certainly. And I think that it's the type of thing that we talked about with, like, administrations we maybe personally didn't agree with. We made those kinds of insinuations. I think a lot of people did. They were like, well, you know, this could happen and that could happen. There were a lot of interested and passionate people along the way to make sure that a lot of the resources and tools that could have imposed some totalitarian dystopia that we were all terrified of or that we might exaggerate about, it was very much in the same frenzy of like, well, you know, they're hilarious, they're buffoons, you know, this could never be, but we should be careful because this could turn into that. And I think that was something you always really pointed out, E,
mm-hmm.
along the way in the last half dozen years in talking about the way sociology has been fragmented, society has been fragmented and bifurcated and polarized and so forth, and just expressed the sense of urgency that we need to pay attention and we need not just sit around and like think that it's just funny, because it's not. I mean, like as with like the January 6th stuff, this was like not the last time they'll be used.
No, but there are funny elements to all of this. When you see people trip over themselves and basically give all the evidence that, you know, are bragging about going to the January 6th insurrection.
Oh, yeah, it's hilarious.
And getting themselves in trouble.
I understand it as a coping mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way to cope with how crazily divergent people's opinions are these days. To accept that there is some humor in it is, I think, a good strategy to stay healthy. But I don't think that is necessarily that's the entirety of the picture. And in fact, I think it's all quite a bit more serious.
Well, I think people are getting that.
That's why
I think,
say don't be smug. That's why I say like we definitely should be paying attention to these things.
Well, that's my point, is that this could easily switch, and we could be the ones that don't have access to the technology we need, and losing these battles, the tech companies could easily be on the other side. They could easily be supporting the state. And in many parts of the world, they are. So let's not think of this as a permanent status, because with literally the flip of a switch or a 0 to a 1, that can change. That can all change. I want to get to this phone call because I've been waiting patiently. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hello, it's Philip from Missouri.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm okay. I'm the first caller.
You are the first caller, yeah. That doesn't usually happen. Usually the second caller.
Oh, okay. While you're talking about the social media stuff, a lot of these guys are looking for attention. This is their way of sticking it to liberals. That's why Telegram, all this stuff, really hasn't taken off like it should. Because there's not much of an audience to see them stick it to the libs, as you put it, you know?
Uh-huh.
There needs to be a way for law enforcement to be able to look at logs for people who are planning things, you know what I mean? If they have a search warrant, I'm fine with people searching through people's logs. As long as it's done properly and there's due process in it, I've got no problem with it.
I think it's better to infiltrate. I think law enforcement should infiltrate the groups more so than platforms providing logs. I think that's the best way to build a case.
Yeah, but in many cases, law enforcement agrees with these groups.
There's so that,
they've infiltrated in that way because they already are those groups.
Well, like I said, these guys are exhibitionists anyway.
Yeah, I think they think of this as going viral.
About everything they do.
Yeah, they think they're going viral because they're on the internet or something. It's like, oh,
exactly.
Wow, we're getting attention.
It's like the school board stuff. All these people are showing up at the school boards all of a sudden, raising all kinds of grief and everything, and the first thing they do is smile in front of a TV camera called the news says, well, who are you? And they put them on TV, and they have no problem with going right in front of that TV and putting on as much of an act as they can.
That's right, and that gets them more followers and more people to show up
and sympathy.
Exactly, mm-hmm. It's like on Facebook. They are more. When I say something on Fox News, they'll read my profile and they'll say, "Oh, I saw this picture of you there," and I was like, it's Facebook. You're supposed to put up pictures you want up there. I don't understand what you're upset over and trying to get me with. But, you know, it's all about likes and shares with them. It's like, nobody ever likes your post and everything. It's like, I'm not looking for people to like my post.
Yeah.
I'm just there saying, hey, I'm doing this today, and, you know, here's a picture of me doing something. I don't understand why you're reading my profile to try to get me with a picture of me and my dog doing something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, this obsession with likes and follows, it's so unhealthy. And many of us have seen this from the beginning, but it's really gotten to be such an important part of many people's lives. And, you know, years from now, I'm sure there will be a lot of people in therapy as a result of that.
It has made vapid, shallow people even more vapid and shallow.
Yeah, and turn that into something that's a goal. You know, I can be more shallow than you. It's awful. And the thing is, you know, with technology, there's so much you can do. There's so many worthy things that you can create out of high tech. And we're, you know, it's like anything else. Whether it's television, a great medium, but wasted on the idiots, on the lowest common denominator, making just selling products and things like that, and the true potential is never realized. It's true almost of anything in society, but it really bugs me to see so much potential wasted in technology.
Well, that, you know, we could kind of counter all this if we do some. I think something like guerrilla activism. You know, like all the pictures of Trump as president is public domain, right?
I'm not sure about all of them. While he's president, certainly. While he's president, I'm pretty sure. You know, you'd have to ask. Maybe Alex would know that.
You can find them. They're owned by the public. They're government property.
Yeah, it's like NASA pictures, right?
Absolutely.
So what's it? If I was like, you know, go to Amazon, go to print shop on Amazon, right? Take a picture of Trump, just plop him on like a T-shirt or something like that, or like a mouse pad, and sell for like $20, right? But if I take the money from those sales and I donate it to something like the ACLU,
mm-hmm.
or somebody like that, you know, especially a thin blue line item,
uh-huh.
you know, it'll sell a bunch of money, get a bunch of money out of it, but they'll be funding the cause they hate the most.
Well, it only works if they know they're doing that.
I think they kind of like the ACLU, actually.
Who does?
Fascists
like the ACLU?
I don't know. Don't they always don't they always defend them and make sure they can like talk their
The ACLU defends freedom of speech and things like that, but there is no way that fascists or Trumpers like the ACLU.
Okay, but would there not be a possibility of a coincidence that you're doing this and by the way ACL is actually defending them on some other matter?
Sure. Yeah.
That could happen in this reality. I just want to that's where I was going with it.
Alex, I believe you had something to contribute?
Yeah, it's going back to the general notion of the social media being such a horrible place and, you know, where all this misinformation and terrible things have been spread. And I think what we need to do in terms of combating this is to rethink, in a sense, what due process means in this context, because we're dealing with a volume and a velocity of such utter crap that is being thrown around online. And in particular, if we go back to what we were talking about on the ordinary session of Off the Hook, which is this pathway of extremism and radicalization that starts with Facebook groups and moves on to Telegram channels, then we need a way to address expeditiously the fact that these Facebook groups are easily radicalizing and amplifying misinformation or hate or speech in some way. And given the volume and velocity of it, we need some kind of abbreviated form of what due process looks like, because having an opportunity to be heard and hearing both sides out on an issue doesn't seem like it's working out for us. Because it is just way too easy to overwhelm these platforms. It's way too easy to continue to astroturf with users and fake accounts and just amplify hate or misinformation in so many ways that I think we need to have certain things like presumptions that we have in the law. And so if we take a physical analog, something that might seem a little bit crazy, like laws in New York City about carrying a pocket knife. This might be a good example here. I know it might sound like it's completely off the wall here, not to be punny or anything, Emmanuel.
Did you get in trouble for carrying a pocket knife recently?
No. Okay. But let me tell you, given how things have been going in the city, carrying a knife certainly has crossed my mind. But I don't do it for this reason. Because the laws about carrying knives and what types of knives and whatnot you can carry in New York are very strict. And you can't have a knife that locks in place. It has to be under a certain length. And even if you have a knife that conforms to these specifications, if a police officer stops you and you have this knife on you, he can presume that you have the intention of engaging in some kind of criminal.
Uh-oh. Alex is frozen in place. Obviously he was treading into territory that is considered controversial.
So that's weird because a lot of people use pocket knives in like warehouse work. You know, you carry a knife, you know, because you're breaking down boxes or you're doing like, you know, all manner of stuff.
Well, I'm not familiar with what the law actually says, but and I also don't know, you know, a cop isn't just going to search you. You have to.
You'd have to brandish it or be in a place where they're checking you.
Uh huh. Look at Alex. Looks like he's in the middle of a thought and is never completing it.
Stop and frisk still exist?
It's no. Coming back because the Democrats elected the next cop. Isn't that nice? that's what we have in New York City now. So stop and frisk will probably be coming back in some form. Guys in Skype land, is there a way you can commute? Oh, here's Alex is coming back, I think.
There he is.
Alex, you froze.
Yeah, So all right, I don't know what was said in my absence here. But,
I just said knives are common, so that seems like a harsh penalty. Like people working in warehouses always have knives, so you can easily run afoul.
And then we made fun of you a little bit, but we moved on.
Okay, all right, I'm not surprised. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with my internet connection today. Somebody's dosing me is what it seems like. But in any event, so you go back to this issue. You have a pocket knife on you. The police stop you. It conforms to the specifications. That would make the knife legal to carry, but under New York law, a cop can arrest you because he can presume that you have the intention to do something illegal with that knife, in which case it becomes beholden on you to rebut that presumption in court to show that you didn't have the intention to do something illegal with that particular knife. So I think these types of presumptions could be really useful in terms of how we police and enforce certain norms or morals or standards of universal decency and fairness online. Let's say, you know, a Facebook group pops up that is somewhat related or looks something similar to something that was just taken down for promoting misinformation. Instead of going through the whole rigmarole and process of taking down that thing, looking at the users, giving them an opportunity to amass a following and then funnel those people over to another platform like Telegram, let's shut it down more expeditiously by using certain presumptions of malicious activity.
Yeah, recognizing a pattern.
Exactly, recognizing this pattern, you know, and that pattern implies a presumption of malicious or nefarious activity, and it's beholden on the person who's running that group or running a particular account or behind certain content to then rebut that presumption. Now, of course, that can work against us because this is a presumption that can be based on viewpoint. And I will say, in going back to the discussion again we had on the regular off-the-hook session at the outset when we were talking about funding and give, send, go, yeah, thinking about that throughout the program, it is a little bit scary to think that funding and money in particular can be seized if we're talking just about things like viewpoint. It has to be, in my mind, viewpoint plus something else that crosses a line of legality in order for there to be, I think, a lawful seizure of the funds that were raised. And I think the same thing can apply to these platforms and allow us to police them better. And I think what we need right now is speed. So we need to combine presumptions, the expeditious enforcement, the concept of expeditious enforcement, into what we perceive as an evolving notion of due process.
Is there a way, Alex, that you could give a specific example of this with regards to online presence, how this would work?
Probably not, but sure. You know, let's we can try, right? I mean, if we think about the Freedom Convoy Facebook groups that have been popping up, I mean, it was like playing whack-a-mole with these types of things. They'd go up, they'd go down, they'd amass several thousand followers, people would be funneled over to Telegram, and then once they're in Telegram, some of these groups would have tens of thousands of followers in them, and the persons that were behind the Facebook groups are now able and willing, of course, to push out all kinds of conspiracy theories, efforts to fund certain bizarre things, 5G nut job type stuff. But let's say if we can tie a Facebook group online to an account or to, let's say, a device ID, these things are all connected. They're all engaged in some form of activity or another that relates to the same types of concepts. We can imply a certain type of ownership. We can presume that all of these accounts are connected if they all relate to, let's say, the same IP address, the same Mac ID, the same device ID, or they have the same login pattern, something like that. There's lots of ways that we can track and trace people for advertising, for highly targeted advertising purposes, that keeps these platforms afloat and makes them tons and tons of money. Why don't we use the same type of behavioral analytics data to tie together malicious activity so that we can better police and enforce misinformation and radicalization on these platforms?
What is the tipping point, though? At what point do you say this is malicious, this needs to be dealt with, and who makes that decision?
That's tough. I mean, it can be a judgment call. It can be based on certain local laws. It's hard to have a universal enforcement mechanism here, but I think that once things start to spill over and cross over into the meat space, into things that could reach physical persons and do physical harm, or they start violating fundamental norms of fundamental norms of decency, I think what we need more than anything else right now are universal values that apply across the spectrum. If we go back to this as a philosophical concept, this would be something akin to natural law, right? So what are the concepts and what are the values that we hold dear as human beings across all spectrums? I mean, almost going back to something like the Ten Commandments, right? Thou shalt not spread misinformation. Thou shalt not dox people online. I mean, I think we need to identify and figure out what are these universal values that we would like to enforce and have those set as a norm and a baseline for due process. And in fact, not surprisingly, I had written about this a little bit for a paper that I submitted yesterday to Yale Law School for a conference at which I'm going to be speaking and presenting. And it seems like it's going to be a really cool conference called Technologies of Deception. That'll be happening at Yale Law School on March 25th and 26th. And I responded to the CFP in the paper that I wrote about the inherent flexibility and of the domain name system and how that's being used for deceptive purposes. The very tail end of that paper is when I get into these norms of fundamental fairness and how we can use them for due process purposes and things like that. So if anybody's interested in attending that conference, it's going to be I think it might actually be an entirely virtual conference now, unfortunately. But, contact us at oth@2600.com. Be happy to get you an invitation.
Well, why couldn't we, take the token, on an NFT, right, and just assign said token to your profile so that way you have more of a fail-safe to make sure you don't get somebody, spoofing your account to spread stupid stuff online.
Alex, I don't think he can hear you nodding.
Yeah, look, I think it's interesting. And, you know, NFTs are another really interesting thing that's been popping up, too. And I'll segue into something completely different now, too. So, you know, but somewhat related, I guess, in the sense that it originates from the DNS or the domain name system. But one of the things I watch for on a daily basis are right-wing and extremist domain names that are popping up that relate to things like militia activities or white nationalism and things. And so I watch for all these domains that pop up with the word militia in them. And a really interesting one came up the other day that seemed bizarre to me. And I'll tell you what it is. It's UkrainianCryptoMilitia.com. Now, what do you think that could be for?
I think it's just something like say for instance, you take like a group like let's say Black Lives Matter want to start a crypto coin, right? Maybe they want to, you know, undermine the U.S. economy by getting everybody into crypto coin, getting all black folks into crypto coin instead of using regular banks, so they can undermine the economy or something like that. That's what comes to mind when I hear that. The Ukraine, well, what was it, crypto militia?
Well, yeah, UkrainianCryptoMilitia.com. I picked this up the other day, and I said, well, this is so interesting. I need to navigate to this in a sandbox machine, of course. And so I took a look at it, and it was fascinating what I saw here. I mean, this is really neat. We could have spent the whole hour, I think, just talking about this. But I'm going to read to you what it says on the site. And within hours of that domain being registered, there was a massive amount of content up there. And the site is actually launching, it seems like, on February 19th. So it says, you know, public sales will also start on the same date. But here's a quote from the site. The people of Ukraine have shown their courage, ingenuity, and outright badassery when fighting for their homes, country, and rights. Because of recent events, they are now at risk of, and this is a typo, losing, I think they mean to say losing, all they have achieved, and have their country as their main battleground for two superpowers to settle their disputes. When you purchase a Ukrainian crypto militia NFT, you are supporting their cause.
Oh boy.
For national sovereignty and reducing the suffering of the civilian population. It goes on. Not only that, but you get a unique art piece and proof that you took action during an historical moment. Ukrainian crypto militia decided to help Ukraine. 10,000 unique fighters have gathered whatever weapons they could find, put on some clothes, adopted Ukrainian aliases, and joined the Ukrainian crypto militia. Each item of the collection has 444 possible attributes distributed over 13 categories, which leads to a ton of possibilities and randomly generates awesome militia members. It's fascinating because if this is legitimate, they are using an NFT or sales of an NFT to fund an actual wartime event, to fund the Ukrainian rebellion against a Russian incursion.
Okay,
and this is all,
Alex,
this is all created operating on the presumption that a war starts.
Yeah, what in there tells you that they have anything to do with the Ukrainian resistance other than just kind of, you know, taking advantage of the situation to get attention?
Well, it certainly could. It absolutely could be a rogue band of people from, you know, Luxembourg, New Jersey, whoever. It doesn't really matter. It could be anywhere.
Is the site actually in Ukraine?
Well, I'll tell you in a second.
Yeah.
I don't know. I need to go into a server. I doubt it.
I doubt it, too.
I don't think that it was. Hold on.
I wouldn't be surprised if the same people who registered this have registered other sites in other hotspots of the world trying to take advantage or, you know, I'm cynical about this, but, you know, I've seen it happen so many times.
Yeah, well, should be a little bit cynical of it. No, it's interestingly enough, it's actually hosted in Israel.
It's hosted in Israel, you say? Yeah.
It says I don't know.
I don't know. I have my doubts about this one. But, you know, it sounds interesting, but it just sounds like they're grabbing at headlines.
Well, yeah. They certainly are. But, you know, I haven't seen anything about this. It hasn't seemed to have launched. It does have a list of their team members, most of which do seem to be Ukrainian names or names that look Ukrainian to me.
Oh, actual people. Okay, all right. You know, now they have a little credibility. They've had actual names and people on there. I wasn't aware of that.
Just got to wait and see on it.
Yeah.
Well, Melania Trump, here's what my thing about NFTs. It's so prone to fraud. Like, Melania Trump's, like, little NFT where she tried to get it sold for, I don't know, I think it was $75,000 or something like that. It's just, like, a picture of somebody drew her eyes or something like that.
That was real? I thought that was a joke.
What happened was that she started selling it to herself. So she started selling it to her own account to get the price up in hopes that somebody would be hooked to buy it for that price that's shown online.
This really happened?
Yeah, this really happened. Google, it's like it's on CNN, I think, the first time I heard about it.
She, like, invaded the value of a digital property just by promoting it and then bought it at the...
That's not former first lady behavior.
It's like a IPO, basically.
Wow.
Selling shares to yourself or something.
Unreal.
Yeah, that's the whole thing about the NFT and crypto coin and all that. There's all kinds of pump and dump schemes going on with this stuff.
Oh, it's like, rampant
somebody
right
will set
now.
Up a coin 1 week. And this is all done in Discord-like service, right? And they'll set up a website for it. And they'll get a bunch of people to put some money into it, and like 3 days later, the site's gone. And so it's a crypto coin. They catch it out in Ethereum or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And they just disappear. But Melania Trump, yeah, she whoever set up the NFT, or she did, I don't know if she did or a person or an aide did it for her, but... Her account start buying the NFTs to try to get the price up so people would buy it and show that there's interest in it.
Interesting. Rob, I believe you had something to add?
Yeah, I mean, that's been a major component of this whole NFT, you know, bullcrap world, is that it's dead easy to get multiple wallets and accounts on these things and use them to sell yourself a thing you made for any exorbitant amount. And then there's a purchase history behind it saying, yeah, it sold to somebody for X amount of money, so it must be worth that much. And then the idea is you use that to fool people into buying it for more than that. And so you've made money off the top of that. It's part of why this whole thing is just a big Ponzi. It's a big scam to begin with. But it's pretty funny to hear about Melania Trump involving herself in that sort of thing. That's been part of this whole world since it popped up.
Reminds me a lot of how you could buy like followers for social media accounts if you needed to have more than 1,000 or more than however many followers. You remember when you'd have like farms of people that would basically like your posts or whatever. You could hire basically a whole cadre of followers, and that would then make you more substantial on the social network. This is like years ago, probably half a dozen, 12 years ago. I don't even know. It's like, it's probably not even that. It's probably still done a lot.
So I pay my followers, but they're real people. I pay real people, not fake people.
This crypto product, this NFT, sounds like it's the same thing as Rob described. It's like, yeah, you know, I'll make this look like there's interest, and then you basically count on or anticipate that rush of people through pumping and promoting it and saying, hey, look how popular this is getting. People have FOMO. It's capitalizing on fear of missing out, and I can't tell you how many different things.
That's a thing, FOMO, fear of missing out?
Yep,
I've never heard that
before.
And
so,
it sounds like something Alex would say.
People.
Yeah, they had a Super Bowl ad where it just showed like a QR code to go to a Bitcoin site.
Yeah, it was Coinbase.
You, 15 free Bitcoin or whatever, $15 worth of Bitcoin on it when you scan it in.
Okay.
And I mean, it's all just a scam. It's like the It's like putting a collector's edition on a movie or something like that just to sell a million copies of them.
Well, it's...
When you're pumping out 3 or 4 million copies of them to begin with.
And it's kind of a money grab. It's kind of like a quick way to get some cash and string people along, but it's not really the coolest way you could use this technology. Like, yeah, there's a lot of ways you can get money. If you could hop across all the mines and get into Fort Knox, I'm sure you could enhance some of your value there. But, you know, the barrier to entry is very high. So, like, for people to... For this kind of... let's just make money with this. It's like, well, is that really all we can do with NFTs? Like, there's got to be much more creative potential in this.
They have mines outside Fort Knox?
Yeah, the entire grass area is full of mines.
I am so glad you told me that. Caller, we're going to move on, but thanks for calling us, and we hope to hear from you again.
Okay, later.
All right, take care. Our phone number, again, 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. We always love to hear from our listeners. I can't believe Melania Trump did. I mean, I guess I can, but how is that not fraud to fake buy something? I mean, don't they ban that on eBay where you bid for yourself and drive the price up? And
yeah, you're supposed to just list it really low and let other people have the auction, not bolster your own auction.
So nothing happened, I guess, as a result of this. No penalties whatsoever. As if she needs money. My God.
That's the other thing. It's celebrities. It's people who already have, who are paying tech bros or whatever, people on Epic or on these NFT brokerage sites. They're like, yeah, I want to get in on this, you know, hook it up for me. And like, yeah, that's hooked up for them so they can go and make more money. I mean, who's really, how is this equitable? Like, How is this different than the society we're already enduring?
802-321-4225. Rob, go ahead.
And a big factor in this is that, like, in the cryptocurrency space, in, like, say, the Bitcoin world, the things are still very sort of pyramid-y in the sense that the people who are holding onto large amounts of coins still need new people to keep throwing their money into the system in order to keep the whole cycle going and in order to be able to offload what they've got and get some money back without the whole system sort of collapsing in upon itself like a run on the bank. And so, like, you're seeing ads on the Super Bowl now, and that Super Bowl ad that was mentioned actually crashed the site with the amount of interest that it got, with the amount of clicks on that QR code. And so all these ads are like people, the big players, the money players in that whole scene, trying to just keep their position on the pyramid secure by getting new people into it. It's all just amazingly fraudy. It's amazingly fraud flavored when you look into it with any sort of critical eye. And I'm amazed that the space seems to be still growing at a roaring pace.
Yeah, that's the fallacy there too. Is it's backwards mentality, because you are only looking at this as a source of value. And it's only the highest value that makes it worth anything. If you look at it as though it is nothing, then it will grow like it should. Like, I like this art. I paid what I paid for it, but I truly like it. I'm not trying to flip it. But if everything in the NFT world is flipping because everybody's so afraid of losing on any one item or a portfolio of items, then, yeah, everybody's going to be constantly trying to sell and to sell someone else to leave them hanging.
Go ahead, Alex.
To play devil's advocate, or the NFT's advocate, I guess in this particular context, I do think that there are legitimate uses and values to NFTs, but maybe not for just having an NFT bought and sold and transferred in and of itself. What an NFT or a non-fungible token can be is a record of some ownership of a third thing, of another thing, or an ownership interest in some other item and some third-party thing that is recorded on a blockchain in some immutable fashion. And if we're talking about, and I think we've talked about this in the past, perhaps an NFT could be used to as almost like a deed recordation type of mechanism for property in a digital sphere. But if you think about it in the art context, this could be really kind of interesting, because one of the perennial problems that we've had in regular physical art is, let's say there's a exhibition that's happening at the Whitney Museum right now, hypothetically, and it's some kind of massive steampunk exhibition where, you know, it's one artist's conception, but lots of different iron workers and costume designers and people, they all got together for this. But you know, only one artist can really take credit for this type of thing in a real way, right? We have this problem of attribution for artistic creativity and artwork and collaboration in the real world. And what an NFT can do with respect to art, whether it's physical art or whether it's digital art, can be a way of recording who collaborated on a particular project, who has some kind of ownership right, and perhaps who has some kind of right to perpetual royalties based on transfers down the line and some kind of title of ownership. So I think there are a lot of usages here. A lot of them will relate to provenance. A lot of them will relate to attribution and collaboration. But I really do think that we're scratching the surface when it comes to NFTs. I don't think we should completely poo-poo them. I also see the way that children interact with the virtual worlds that they inhabit, whether it's Roblox, whether it's Minecraft, whether it's the quote-unquote metaverse, which I don't like to even use that word because of the association with Meta in particular, but if it's some kind of VR world, kids these days don't think of ownership in the same way that we do. You know, they have a different concept of what it means to have something. Having a digital thing to them, or having the right to display, or the right to claim, or the right to brag about having something in a digital sphere can actually have real concrete value in their lives. And so I think that we need to take a look at this from a more philosophical perspective, and in particular the perspective of somebody like the American philosopher William James, who espoused pragmatism, and that, you know, whatever works for an individual or whatever works for a particular idea may be true and may be valuable to that individual. And so I think there are going to be many, many more subjective notions of value and ownership that may be alien to some, and alien in particular to our generation, but completely native and understandable to the next.
For unknown reasons, our phone lines remain open, so please give us a call. What?
We still have a call on
the line. Wait a minute, we have a call. The phone didn't ring. No, we have no call on the line. Phone number is 802-321-4225. You know something I don't, Kyle?
Caller, are you still there?
Well, they're not up. Hold on. Okay, now they're up. Is there somebody there? No, somebody there. They hung up. Yeah, 802-321-4225 is our phone number. Rob, you had something.
I work as an artist. I've sold a lot of my artwork. I've sold tangible items of artwork, paintings, drawings and things, sculptures, and I've sold digital artwork. I've sold digital commissions and things like that. And I've also donated a lot of it for fundraising purposes, like such at WBAI. But the fact of the transaction has always been somebody wants a piece of artwork, somebody gets a piece of artwork, and I get to have a little money in return, which is nice for me. But the minute it stops being about people wanting to have this piece of art, wanting to brighten up their room or, you know, what have you, and the minute it stops being an aesthetic item and starts being sort of an investment, something to lock in a vault and just gloat over the fact that you own and can drive up the price if somebody else wants it, I've always been very uneasy with that. And maybe that's why I don't have a more successful, aggressive art career. After I'm dead, it'll all be a lot more valuable. But until this time, I'm quite happy just selling things for reasonable prices and not worrying about having to think of them as more than the piece of art they are, hanging the, like, investment factor on it. Because I think it gets, like, money market stuff where you're taking different kinds of money and, like, playing them against each other to see if you can exploit the fluctuations in value between them. Like, the money stops being a thing that you could pay your rent with and buy a sandwich with and starts being this thing with a force of its own and, like, jobs that it wasn't designed for, and it just I am really not comfortable with all of that. And I see the whole NFT scene, the cryptocurrency scene, where this is all like not just about making your money fluid so you can buy things in different ways, but making the money itself the thing that people are trying to drive up and pump and dump and so on. It's just replicating. It's using the digital space to replicate all the worst things about meat-based capitalism without providing tangible benefits. I'm not into it, man.
Well said, and a healthy attitude. Okay, we have a phone call. Good evening. Go ahead. Hello?
They hung up.
Okay, we got to stay on the line, folks. That's how it works. 802-321-4225. Okay, let's see if they stay on the line this time. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hey, hi. My name's Sigflup from 612.
How you doing? That's in Minnesota.
Yeah, sure is. I'm a first-time caller. I've never called, so I'm going to be off topic here. I just wanted to say I'm calling you on a Linux phone, an Ubuntu phone.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. Put it together the other day.
Sounds great.
It's working pretty well.
Sounds really good.
Yeah, cool. Well, that's about it. Just keep up the good show.
Wait, that's all you have to say? That you're calling us on a Linux phone?
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm honored to be the test call.
Yeah,
I speak for everyone here. We're happy that it works.
How long did it take to actually put this together?
Yeah, tell us about it.
Oh, a few days. It came with the Manjaro, Sasha from Manjaro, and the voice didn't work. It sounded like a unsigned carrier on a signed signal. It's like. So I eventually got Movian working on it, which is a sort of a version of Debian, but for phones.
Uh-huh.
And I've had some problems as well. Right now I'm running a Ubuntu Touch, which seems to work pretty well. The GPS is kind of doesn't turn on right away, but aside from that, a lot of the features work. So.
Well, it's not overly exuberant.
Ubuntu Touch is pretty fun.
It's not overly exuberant GPS, which is a good thing. Rob, you have something to add?
Yes, indeed. Sigflup, it's great to hear from you. Just to let you guys know, I met Sigflup long ago at a Hope conference, and you know, we've kept in touch somewhat over the years. And Sigflup, you do artwork, and you know, I'm an owner of an art book you put out some time ago. And you know, we were just talking about selling art and you know, artist commerce and stuff. And you know, just along those lines, I want to say I'm very happy to own that art book because it's something that I enjoy having and looking at now and then. So you know, keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you. Oh, thanks for liking it. I will keep up the good work. You keep up the good work as well.
All right. Well, great hearing from you, and stay warm out there, Minnesota.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. 802-321-4225. That's a Vermont area code, 802, but we're not in Vermont. Our phone number is somehow. And someone has called that number, and now we will find out who they are. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yes. Speak up. Go ahead. Can you hear me?
Sorry, it's a little low.
I'm sorry to hear that. I'll try shouting. How about that? Can you hear me now?
No. Okay, we got it sorted out.
Okay.
Hey, it's Kirby from Etobicoke.
Oh, hey, how you doing?
Not too bad. I'm up here in Ontario. We've got all kinds of truck conventions and virus.
It's the center of the world right now.
Oh, yeah, you bet. And you know what? The premier of the province lives like 7 kilometers away from me. Like, we are in the center of the world.
Wow. Dope for it, huh?
Oh, yeah. Dofo. We call him Dofo.
Dofo. I love it. That's brilliant. Now, it's interesting because Doug Ford actually is sort of taking the side of Trudeau, unlike some of the other premiers who don't want the Emergencies Act, but Ford does.
You know, Doug Ford's a fairly reasonable person. He's a businessman. He's not extreme to either direction. He'll do whatever it takes to be elected. But you know, fortunately, over the course of the pandemic, he's just kind of realized that the faster we kind of sort this thing out, the faster we get out of it, as opposed to ignoring it.
Okay, I agree with that.
So I mean, I would never really talk. Really good about Doug Ford, but you know, you got to give him his credit. He was a leader. He told everybody to get vaccinated, you know, that kind of stuff. he was there when the worst of it was on, and he was the one that declared the shutdowns and so on. So,
well, it's important to acknowledge people, if you don't agree with them politically, when they get it right. It's important to do that and not say, yeah, because I disagree with them on other things, I'm not going to give them the credit they deserve. That's what I'm seeing by listening in on these communications with the blockade people. I literally heard somebody say, you can find this in the archive, that anything Trudeau does, I am against, no matter what it is. And with that attitude, you know, it's you're not really putting forth a reasonable argument.
Well, and Trudeau doesn't really do a lot of things. That's the other, mm-hmm. the other thing. Like, the government in general, I mean.
Fascinating to watch.
There hasn't been really any extreme kind of declarations on either side of the fence in the last little while. You know, some of the goalposts have been moved one direction or the other, but, like, we're not particularly extreme in our political endeavors here.
I mean, it all sounds so polite and laid back, even though there is some ferocity there. But, I mean, today the big thing was that the police handed out flyers to the people that they're, you know, mildly threatening with arrest.
Well, so this is the deal. Like, they handed out some kind of "you're going to be arrested tomorrow" kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So I think this was what happened was the Ottawa police chief resigned yesterday.
Slowly, yeah. That's his name, Slowly.
Mr. Slowly, or Captain Slowly, or, no, what would he be? Captain Slowly?
Well, now he's ex-police chief Slowly, I guess.
Okay, I just don't want to be disrespectful to the position he held.
No.
Anyways. So, yeah, he's gone. Now, the RCMP and the OPP have taken joint command of the protest. And so, the
Ontario Provincial
Police
and
Force.
Yeah, okay. And RCMP, Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
That's the federal.
And the RCMP. So, we'll see what happens.
Okay. Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, I hope it ends peacefully, but it has caused a lot of harm. And, you know, you see restrictions being lifted, and I'm just, you know, it annoys me to hear them taking credit for that because they had nothing to do with that. That had to do with the science. That had to do with people getting vaccinated and the disease not spreading as much. The rates are going down all over the place, and that's a great thing. That's what we all want.
Okay, so let's have some context. First of all, we are in a provincial election in about 4 months, I think.
Oh, didn't know that.
So that's the first thing. Mr. Doug Ford, the Premier of Ontario, is up for re-election within 6 months. I think it's 4 months. So suddenly he's given everybody back money. He's going to cancel some kind of, you know, license plate renewal fee, $150 a year. He's telling everybody to fed up with masks. So if you look into the story, the reason why he was so upset this week about, how the pandemic is dividing everybody, it's because his daughter has a cop husband whose nickname is the Juggernaut, and he got, like, sacked because he wouldn't get vaccinated.
Wow.
That is context.
So the son-in-law of the premier is, like, an anti-vaxxer who got, after 20 years in the police force, he got sacked because he wouldn't get vaccinated. And the daughter has been this vocal, Doug Ford's daughter is a vocal anti-vaxxer.
But it's interesting to see they're not getting preferential treatment.
Well, I mean, it's ridiculous. In Ontario, like 90% of truck drivers are vaccinated. That's
right.
The other thing.
Right.
Like, everybody's vaccinated here.
Yeah, that was a bit confusing.
Kind of.
It was a bit confusing at the beginning because people were asking, well, okay, are these guys actually vaccinated who are protesting? And nobody was really sure. But my impression is that the majority of truck drivers don't want any part of this.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Like, how many people are in Ottawa now? I don't even know. If they're about 600 kilometers away. I wouldn't be heading over there to check it out, but I mean... Really, what's going on down there? They sacked the police chief, or he quit, I guess.
He quit, yeah.
They told him to quit before we sacked, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you haven't done anything in 3 weeks. People are trying to sleep.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, they're honking horns. They have a train horn.
Yeah, we heard that.
Yeah, we heard that.
We heard that down here. Yeah, and it's really making things unpleasant for the people who live there, and it's causing all kinds of a ruckus in the town, and costing a huge amount of money. And for what purpose? You know, that's a question everyone's
asking. And pollution.
Oh, yes, the
pollution.
Nobody's
even mentioned the pollution. These idiots are driving around people's residential areas in big trucks.
Uh-huh.
How about I go into your place with some, I don't know, what it was, a wood chipper or something, or a leaf blower, and I just walk around your house for 3 days?
Uh-huh.
It's toxic.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Literally toxic.
And what did these people in Ottawa do? They bought a house. That was their crime. They rent an apartment. Like, they're just in the town where and I mean, it's been mentioned before, but most of the mandates are provincial. They're not even federal. You don't go to Ottawa if you want to get things done in Toronto. You go to Queen's Park in Toronto.
Right. Right.
Where the provincial government meets, because they're the ones that make the mandates for the, you know, for the health department and stuff. Just like in the states, you know, each province has their own rules, and the federal government might make a general kind of rule, but each province could do whatever they want.
So that would be like going to would that be like going to Washington D.C. to protest a law in Wyoming?
Precisely.
Yeah, that's just so crazy to me that they don't get that.
I guarantee you, Alex. I guarantee you, if it wasn't a Liberal prime minister, they would not be doing this. And that's what it's about. It's anti-Trudeau. If you listen to the people on the radio, that's what they talk about constantly is Trudeau. You know, it's never any of the premiers who are, you know, with their political party. It's always the other political party. So that's why I don't think it's really about the issues they claim it's about.
That just gets them in the vicinity. And mind you, yes, they're blocking off the street in front of Parliament and then the arterials coming towards it that are residential.
Yeah.
Okay, but let me just state something that's so shocking. Okay, let me state a shocking fact.
Okay.
Imagine people were so angry that they blocked up Ottawa because people in Native communities around Canada haven't had drinking water for a decade.
Wouldn't that be something?
Like, imagine that happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's something.
Losers, like, driving around.
Yeah, that's something to really be upset about. That's costing lives, and it's something that can be fixed, that can be dealt with if it's taken seriously.
And whenever
I just
do you
don't
see...
get it. I don't get what they're fighting for. I don't understand. I know, you know, the political and this and that's funded and... These idiots, like, I mean, honestly, are people dealing with mental illness? Are we dealing with a large proportion of these people that are dealing with mental illness? It's very possible.
They were saying that on the radio, but I think it was a specific person that said that she just had to give up, had to go home. It was conveniently today when they're telling everybody they're going to get arrested, but she was listing off all her mental issues, and I was like, wow, this is actually explaining why you're there. No offense to people with mental health problems, but I did, in the back of my mind, hear that and said, gosh, you know, I mean, you would like to distance yourself from the derangement.
Anybody with mental health issues.
No, but this is derangement when you really are there to decry everything, but you don't have any real grievance, and it's tied to these other things, and... It just seems to be alarmism, and I didn't mean to pick on her mental illness, but
it seems like
people are generally very troubled, and they do not know how to express it, and the people that are telling them and trying to guide them to safety are to them imposing a lifestyle choice. When that's not really what it is, it's about public health and public well-being overall, the greater good and all of those sort of altruistic things. But it is just for the sake of being there and being contrary to, like you'd said, the existing government and that particular party alone, and Trudeau's not doing himself a whole hell of a lot of favors. I saw him speaking yesterday, and
well, he's awkward, you know,
he's super awkward.
Yeah, and it's just you get yourself in that position.
So he doesn't
get position.
A haircut at least. He still has that going, where it's like I have like a COVID haircut.
Yeah, it's yeah. You have to be aware of these situations and think of a dignified way of getting past them. And I don't think he's very good at that.
The Liberal government in Canada have historically established their claim through the election, and then just pretended like nothing matters.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually they get voted out by the Conservatives because everybody's like all angry and nothing happened, and they spent all this money, or we had some. They canceled some natural gas plants in order to win like a seat 10 years ago, and it would cost like $3 billion to cancel them or something. You know, like, these guys are not doing themselves any favors. None of the parties are. The Conservatives in Canada can't hire a leader that anybody likes.
Interesting. Interesting to hear all these
different stories.
Yeah, all these parallels between the two countries. But how do you think this is going to end, and when do you think this is going to end?
Well, we got an election. People are now saying that Doug Ford might go for federal.
Oh, you mean prime minister?
Right, because yeah.
Wow.
Because he's the working man. Like, we have this joke at one of the places I work, and it's like my friends, right? Because he always has this everyman kind of conversation whenever he does a press conference. Folks, my buddies, hey, everybody, you know, he's this guy that's in the trenches.
Right.
With you and the working man. So I think that Doug Ford is the one to be beat.
Well, he's going to have to make up his mind what he's running for, if it's premier or prime minister.
Who knows? It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He was running for city council before he ran for this, so he's just going up to... And remember, his brother famously, rest in peace, is Rob Ford.
Right, right. That's where it all started, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I don't want to discredit the dead, but
crack-smoking mayor.
Yeah. That's just a historical fact. That's not really a... It's funny, too, because it was all around here. It's like I said, the guys at the restaurant my mom used to hang out for, you know, cooked at the restaurant where he was in the drunken video and stuff. And
it's
very surreal.
Some Canadian history there. Wow.
It's a very small geographical area, I guess, in Toronto.
Uh-huh. Final question.
So, can I do a couple shout-outs?
Yeah, please, go ahead. Go ahead.
Nagu, my electronics mentor, Arup, Mo, and everybody down there at the electronics shop I work at. A couple of my friends at WALD, they put together Kirby U, which is a weekly kind of training program. They've been trying to up my skills. Tuxedo, Sparrow, Fade, Critter. Who else? Sorry, my daughter just came in while we're talking. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty good for now.
One final question for you. Who would you recommend that we listen to media-wise in Canada to get a somewhat fair sense as to what's going on up there?
Oh, the media business in Canada?
Yeah. Who do you trust?
Actually, it's funny you say that, because one thing you have to realize is we have Bell and we have Rogers.
Right, CTV and Global,
right? And so
these
are the two big kind of media conglomerates. They do the cell phones, they do the cable, they do all, you know, the fiber, everything.
But they run CTV and they run Global, right, to broadcasting.
They run CTV, they run Global, they run City News, they run everything, pretty much. They also co-own the sports teams.
Right. Wow.
It's quite,
Can you imagine
it's
that?
Real.
Getting the ticket revenue and then also getting the broadcast revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. They own the team, and then they charge themselves to broadcast it.
Oh, that's a sweet deal.
Well, they had that in New York with Cablevision and the Knicks, right?
Oh, no, they probably invented it. I don't doubt that.
And there's CBC as well. Do you think they're somewhat balanced?
Okay, so CBC is a government-funded network that's been around for ages. Their coverage is very fair, but they're underfunded.
Mm-hmm.
I think the best bet is, like you say, like, check it out, City News, CBC, CTV, whatever. You know, they all have their perspective. They all have their anchors. It's not particularly extreme one way or the other.
Right.
They have their slants.
I like CTV yeah. News Channel. I find myself glued to that. And I like them especially because compared to CNN in this country, they don't have nearly as many commercials. Every time I turn on CNN, they're in a break. But CTV very rarely does that. Very rarely.
Yeah, CNN, the programming is the commercials, and the commercials is the programming.
It's just terrible.
Inverse.
And how many diseases can one person have? How many pharmaceuticals can they advertise?
I know, right? It's always erectile dysfunction or some kind of, you know, mesothelioma or whatever. It's just constant barraging you with all these drugs.
I really hope that nobody watches CNN and, like, every single commercial, they're like, oh, yeah, that's me. Oh, that's me also.
Uh-huh.
No, this
now,
also.
CNN International is different. If you can get CNN International, much different programming, less commercials. So that's preferable. And then, of course, there's Euronews, there's BBC World News, and Al Jazeera English, which is great. So they're out there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in Toronto, you get everything. Mm-hmm. For, like, I don't know, $100, you get, like, every channel in the world.
Yeah, it seems that way. I wish we did more of that here. Anyway, thank you so much for calling. It's good to hear from you again. I hope this situation works out well up there, and we'll certainly be following it.
Well, I hope so, too. And one more quick thing was, the funny thing was when they were driving through with their trucks and they passed through Toronto,
mm-hmm.
all their supporters, you know when you see a bridge over a highway?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like... It's the worst kind of bridge to cross. It's like it's skinny, it's
yes.
it's steep, the railing is low. That's where everybody took their friends and family to support the truckers.
Ugh.
Up this icy bridge. You should have seen the shot of them all on this icy hill on the side of the 401. I mean, it's like the 401 is the biggest, or I don't know if it's the biggest, but it's the most used highway in North America.
Didn't know that. Wow, that's more
than...
Yeah,
these guys are standing on the side of the road waving Canadian flags at these idiots driving through town with their kids on an icy hill.
Wow. And yeah. There's all kinds of memories that we'll have from this historic event.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Thank you, guys.
All right,
nice
thank you.
Talk to you.
Talk to you next time.
Yeah, speak to you again. Thanks.
Yeah.
All right, folks, any closing thoughts here? Where is that coming from? Who's playing music?
That was OPP.
Yeah, I know that was OPP, but, like...
Naughty by Nature.
Okay, my question is, where was it coming
from?
Alex is playing OPP.
Oh, Alex, you were doing this. Okay, well, that's very funny.
He's moonlighting as a DJ.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. Good luck with that. Good luck with that.
I think that's something new. Surprise you.
DJ litigation.
Do we want to take another phone call? Did you already take the phone call?
What? That's my job.
Oh,
what
yeah,
am I saying?
I thought
here?
We were finished. All right, fine. Kyle has given us another phone call.
People are not on YouTube for nothing.
Back to the phones. Good evening. You're on Off Dog Overtime. We have no luck.
Yeah, greetings from the Beijing Olympic bubble.
It's the Beijing guy again. Oh, my God. Wow. How's it going there?
Good to hear you.
It's been an interesting week. Everything seems to come back to Russia.
Well, we got your video. We got your video of the Chinese food machine, robot, whatever that you want to call it. So that was fascinating. We can't show it on the
radio. Yeah, one tried to kill me yesterday. I got served uncooked chicken, so that was fun.
Oh, I thought it literally tried to kill you. Like,
oh, wow.
Like, reach out.
Yeah, and I closed the hotel bar with some coworkers the other night, and as we're walking towards the elevator, a robot gets off the elevator misting something.
Oh, wow.
And kind of... slid my way, and I had to back up and go around it. And when we got on the elevator and hit to go to our floor, it stopped on the 8th floor, and another robot was waiting to get on. And I asked it, how did you push the button? But it just, sat there.
Wow.
The robots have been interesting.
I this is hard to believe, but boy, that's what's going on.
I'm assuming the mist was some kind of sanitizing, cleaning thing they have.
Do you think the robot communicates with the elevator? Like, they don't have to press the button. Because
it's got
to
be wireless.
Yeah, they have their own communication.
It's got to be a wireless call.
Yeah, totally.
Which means they can conspire and do things without us knowing about it.
Boy, yeah, they're probably already working together.
That's scary.
They didn't kill me in the hall, so they tried to get me.
So you got the elevator riding robot?
Seriously, it's for the most part, it's been really good. just the security thing. And this, it's not the coverage that gets you, but the speed of which they did this. A coworker was talking to a photographer from another media organization who had lost his wallet. And he went down to the help desk at the main press center and reported, hey, I lost my wallet. This is what it looks like. And they asked for his phone number, you know, contact him if it gets turned in. Within about 90 minutes, he gets a phone call saying, you put your wallet in the left pocket of your gray jacket, and we see that you've left your gray jacket in your hotel room.
What?
Whoa.
Hold on. How did they know any of that?
Every inch of public space here is on camera.
Yeah, but the left pocket of your jacket is in public space.
Well, he may have been walking.
Well, it is when you're sitting on a bus or, you know, sitting in the cafeteria.
So they, like, reviewed the video.
That is...
Wow. Yeah.
That's
within
crazy.
90 minutes, they were able to pull all of that together and let him know, hey, you didn't lose your wallet.
I wonder how many people that took, or if any.
Yeah, the whole
thing. It might not have been any people. It might have just been the first person to select the target and then
follow
the face, this guy.
And then find the
face.
Okay,
you need to lose your wallet and lose it in an imaginative place and see if they can tell you what
it is. I almost lost my wallet in Paris coming here. I had to put everything in the bin and then coming through the security. It doesn't move very fast in Paris.
Right.
And I'm sitting at the metal detector and I watch somebody reach in and take my wallet and I tell the security person, hey, he's got my wallet. And they said, you wait, you know. So it is actually still out of his bin. It wasn't nefarious. It was just mistaken wallet identity.
I see. Wow. So this is winding down in another week, right?
Yeah, what's your rush?
Yeah, by this time next week, I'll be deep sleep at home.
Okay, all right. And how has it been a fun experience overall?
Yeah, it has definitely. I get to interact with a lot of people culturally. Waiting for the bus to go to figure skating the other night, I was talking to a couple of university students, and they were surprised to learn that I was from New York. And I said, well, you know, I trained a lot of my New York accent out in high school and early college because I was going into broadcasting, and I wanted to be able to speak on the radio. And, you know, at that time in broadcasting, you had to move around it.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody in Iowa doesn't want to hear somebody from Brooklyn or Queens, enunciating words in the way they do.
Well, that's their loss.
And she said, well, you know, aren't people tolerant in the United States? And I laughed a little bit, and then she didn't understand why I was laughing. I was like, well, you know, yes and no. You know, people are, there's a lot of tolerance, but no, there's also not a lot of tolerance. And it was just an interesting comparison.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, on that subject, people in China learn English from various teachers. It's always funny when I hear somebody in either who is Chinese or is in China speaking English, and they have a Midwestern accent because that's who taught them.
One of the people that I was exchanging pins with, she came in, and you could, like I said last time, you can tell people who spent time in the West because they've got a bit of sass about them, almost maybe a little jaded. And she's talking, and her accent, it sounded like she was from Ireland.
Wow.
And I said, that's an amazing accent. Where did you get that accent? And she said, oh, I learned English in France. I was like, well, that doesn't make sense, but it's amazing.
It is. It really is. Has the COVID safety protocols changed at all in the last week?
No, they've been the same. All of us have been getting talked to on our way out in the morning to remind us to take our tests, because people had missed them, and then there was some people were placed under guard for 24 hours while having additional tests taken because they did that. But they're getting ready for us to all leave. And they want to make sure that we're going to be able to board planes and go where we have to go. So they want to make sure you have your exit procedures ready. So they're upping the marketing of, hey, make sure you get your test, but you have to get it every day, or you're gonna have problems.
And have the tests gotten any more pleasant, or are they still invasive?
Yeah, no, it's still the throat swab. It varies from tester to tester. Getting tested at my hotel in the morning is very gentle. If I go to the main press center, It's a little more, there's more depth to the swabbing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I feel like I've had, it's not a sore throat, but I definitely feel where they've like hit a tonsil.
Oh my God. Wow. They go that far down.
Yeah. Cause it's going to irritate.
Yeah, they can.
Yikes.
It'll irritate the back of your throat a little bit or something if it's constantly being abrased by a kind of a pokey little foam swab. Ugh.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a part of the body that's not used to touch, and suddenly it's every day.
Wow.
So I can imagine feel like you have a sore throat, but it's just from being prodded.
Folks,
which, you know, it's one of those things. Sore throat is a symptom that you're not supposed to
exactly
go to public with. If I'm just touching my throat, it'll be fine.
Folks in Skype land, do you have any questions for our caller from Beijing?
No, but I am enjoying your neutral accent. You've done a good job on it.
I'm sure there's a lot of New York there. You know, I still live in the state, but it's not what it was when I was younger, and it's different than, you know, all of my siblings.
Alex, did you have something?
Oh, I'm just so fascinated about it, and I really appreciate you calling again and relaying to us what's happening. I was on mute, but I was laughing out loud at the robot stories earlier. Thank you so much for relaying that. It just seems like it's such a bizarre, dystopian, strange world, strange little bubble that you're living in right now.
Well, yeah,
and I'm so glad that
you
get
think
to
about the-
hear about it.
Yeah, you think about the strength of China, and it's in the numbers of people. You know, they want to do a project, they get the people, that gets done. Whereas when I was in Tokyo, there's a shortage of people there. They're not having enough children to keep the society going. They're importing workers from other places, and you would expect that the employment of robots would be, you know, it's Japan. They have a robot culture, fascination. Nothing like what I'm seeing here in China. Like, there might be a robot in your sushi restaurant, like, you know, dashing out rice balls to put sushi on top of. But here, robots are employed in so many ways, cleaning the floors and making food for us. And I'm sure this is just the beginning of their robot autonomy.
If you see another one of those robots getting on the elevator, can you send a picture of them to us? Because we sure like
I got the video. I'll post that. To the email. The one getting on, getting off.
The way you're describing it, it just sounds like they're deploying these in every job and in every place they can. Anything that could be done by a robot is automated.
Wait a minute.
Done by a robot.
Robot cop.
Yeah. They have robotic trash cans that will they'll stay against the wall in their charging space, but a couple times an hour, it'll go do a patrol, and then you wave your hand over it, and the lid opens, and you know the Star Wars fan in my from my childhood in me really loves to see it, but at the same time, I'm not sure I want to live in a world where robots are doing people's jobs.
Yeah, have you seen any robots doing law enforcement type things, robot cops, say?
No, I haven't seen that. There's definitely a lot of cops. Interestingly, no military that you would see, like on patrols. There's a lot of checkpoints here because the closed loop is in the middle of a functioning city.
Uh-huh.
At one point early, just before the games opened, there were some military vehicles, you know, kind of akin to a Humvee, that were at some of the checkpoints. But that was only one day, and then we never saw them again. In Tokyo, as soon as we went into security lockdown at the press center, it was staffed with the National Defense Forces, and they had the keys, and we worked the security gateways. And it's a very different experience here.
Wow.
There's police on every corner where we're, you know, through the area where we're, you know, driving through. And there's places where the public's able to come up to the edge of the closed loop and maybe take pictures in front of the characters at the park across the street from the NPC where we wouldn't be able to walk up and go to them. Also, interestingly, in the inside the venues, I went to figure skating the other night because one way or the other, history was getting made. I'm going to try to go again tonight. There is a section that is outside the closed loop where, you know, citizen spectators are able to come in, and I'm sure it's a select group of people.
but we're all in the same building, but they're outside the loop. We can't get over towards where they are.
Well, it's great that you're over there and just taking so many interesting notes and observing things, and a true hacker spirit of just, you know, seeing the technology and experimenting whenever possible, I would imagine, and sharing that information because, you know, for those of us who can't be there, it's fascinating.
Yeah, talking to the university student, she asked about my background, you know, working in technology. I said what I was doing, and she's like, oh, how long did you go to university? I was like, well, a semester and a half, and then I just went to the job market. Want to explain, hey, I'm a hacker. I've been doing this my whole life, but I don't want to use that word here because I don't really know what kind of attention that would bring.
So that's true.
It's kind of like the United States in that way.
How it translates.
Right.
I just love that you're sharing and your deep, deep curiosity and observations, just bringing it and sharing it while you're there, just really taking in the experience the way you are, I think is so cool. I'm glad we're able to share it with other people. There's probably a lot of people who are watching and also curious what it's like there. So this is just such
good. Yeah, and it's, you know, I saw the other day press organization had to debunk some claims that they were forcing people to ski at a nuclear power plant. We talked about that last
week. Yes, we did,
Ironworks.
That's right.
And then it became a big, massive story because, they had to spend the time to say, no, this is what it was, this is how long it was. It was closed to clean the air for the 2008 Beijing Olympics.
Yep.
It was one of the moves they made to get rid of some of the pollution in the sky.
So it's, if my calculations are correct, around 10:30 in the morning. What's on your agenda today?
I had a meeting I needed to take in my hotel, so I'm not in the press center. But after this, I think I'm going to do some laundry so I can get myself ready to leave. I had the hotel do the laundry the first couple weeks because I couldn't get back here. And that ended up being about $268 total.
Oh, my God.
To get my laundry.
$260.
They did hang it
laundry
up in my closet for me, which was really nice.
Well,
but,
yeah, that's
that was interesting.
That's more expensive than any laundry load I've ever run.
Yeah, so they have this hotel's got a very decent laundromat if you can get into it. And there's no charge, and the soap's available, not that, you know, minor details, but I'd like to go home with and not have to do the laundry in the air.
Can you tell? I don't know if you've had working in the media. I don't know if you've actually turned on the TV set, but do you know what how many different channels you get? I know when I was in China, it was all CCTV, meaning Chinese broadcasting.
Yeah, and it's still all CCTV in my hotel. I do have two additional channels that are not local. Well, maybe three or four. There's CNBC has an Asia channel. CNN International, which I can mention in a second, some interesting things there, and HBO Asia, which seems to be broadcasting in English. I don't know if they've made a change to the TV I'm watching, but I'm able to watch that in English. My TV's been on maybe twice in the room since I've been here. It's, there's an interesting channel where all it seems to do is show military drama. Like one-on-one, an individual soldier's going through something. You know, you try to watch it and figure out what's being said because there's no secondary audio or caption. But it's just interesting.
Are people making use of
international?
I'm sorry. Are people making use of translation devices, like handheld translation devices, at all?
Yeah, I had figured by this point, and in a large way, cell phones have replaced all of it. But I've gone to a couple restaurants where they had handheld translation devices, single-purpose devices, and they're very good. Mm-hmm. A lot better than my computer. They would speak into it and just turn it over, and immediately it clearly says what it's trying to say.
Yeah, we've seen the same thing in New York, and they're very useful.
Yes, I had someone put one in my face, basically, to get what I was saying, and it was impressive because it worked really, really well, and it was, like you said, a single-purpose device. And apparently they're really advanced now. We were looking them up, and there's all different kinds. Some are a little, I don't know, it seems like they need you to be, like, logged in or paired with devices. That doesn't tell me it's a single-use device or single-purpose. and that it's, you know, kind of standalone and doesn't require a back end. That itself makes me a little leery of just buying whatever one I find. But it's fascinating, and as you said, the integration in phones, I'm sure this will just also emerge as an app that we all take for granted.
Yep.
I hope not, though, because that feeling of understanding over just the most mundane things is the best part of travel when you're actually able to accomplish things and be understood. It's nice to fight for it, but it's also good to just have the ease of being understood.
I like communicating with people just by pointing and smiling and things like that.
We're good at that.
Yeah, there's a skill to that.
Yeah, and at the restaurants, they have pictures of all the food, so it's pretty easy. I did a lot better learning minor Japanese prior to going to Tokyo than I did learning. My daughter's in a Mandarin class, and she was trying to help me out, and it really didn't go well on my part. Pointing and the fact that they just speak very, very good English here, it's worked out for most of us.
What was your comment or observation about CNN International?
So early on when we first got into our office, we checked in, you know, a couple weeks before everything started. We set up our TVs and were surprised to, you know, and pleased really to find out that there was Western media that we're able to get. But anytime they covered something somewhat controversial here in China, you would see it go to, you know, signal problems.
Wow.
The picture would go off. It's after the topic started. They're talking about I don't even want to say the words because I'm speaking over their airwaves.
Yeah, we know some of the stories.
So, you know, non-Olympic related controversy. And it would just go to bars, standby having signal problems. And then, you know, as soon as that guest was gone or they go on to the next segment, it pops back off.
That would be a good thing to capture if you're at all in a position to be able to do that, just because they'll want to talk about
it. You know, as soon as they started talking about Ukraine, you know, I think a lot of the attention that was negative here has gone away.
Uh-huh.
And somebody made a comment, that China's really unhappy that this Ukrainian stuff is overshadowing their games and that the Russian doping scandal here is overshadowing their games. Honestly, I think they're probably thrilled that there's less management to be done over topics that they haven't brought up.
That's true. Yeah, I can see that too.
I absolutely understand that. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, well, we'll let you get your day started over there in Beijing. Skype people, any final comments for our caller here?
I mean, we just appreciate that you stayed up to talk to us or got up early to talk to us.
I had a meeting before this, so it worked out really well.
Regardless, but thank you. Thank you for scheduling your day around talking to us.
Well, thank you for
taking the call. It's wonderful to hear from inside the bubble.
And it's great talking to somebody in Queens, the Queens one. So.
That's awesome. All right, well, be sure to contact us when you get back. We want to hear all the stories.
We'll do so.
All right.
Looking forward to it. You guys take care.
Take care.
Safe travels.
And that is our last call. I don't care if anybody else calls. We're tired, and it's been a long day. Guys, any final words for the listeners from you out there in Skype land?
Just a final word for anybody who happens to be listening to this who may have missed the radio portion of our program tonight. Our old friend Jim, who was part of this program for a long time, is suffering medical setbacks and could use some cheering up. So if you'd like to send him cards or letters, write to oth@2600.com, and we will get you the address in order to send those things through the mail. Or if you want to just send messages via email, we'll see that they get to him.
I just want to say view page source.
F12.
In particular, anything? Just in general?
No, just generally. Okay. I think we will have better web pages if everyone is looking at the source.
Yeah, but in Missouri, you could go to jail.
Sometimes.
F12.
Laws change, you know?
Uh-huh. Alex, anything from you? All right, that's it. Now we're done. He's playing commercials over YouTube.
Oh,
that doesn't happen. That can't happen. All right, everybody. Thank you. Write to us, OTH2600.com. We will see you next week. Stay safe. Get your vaccine. Do all that cool stuff and register your talk at Hope and get your tickets to Hope, and we'll see you.
Any topic.
Yeah.
We are wide open. Please send us what you're talking about. Anything
from hackers,
the ultra-specific to the widest.
Hackers have so much to talk about, so many different different things. I mean, just our crawlers alone had so many topics today that I would love to know more about. All right, we'll be back next week. Good night.